Mr. Erickson.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Erickson, and I am here on behalf of Mr. Kai Hansjergen. He is the appellant in this case, and this case is being argued today. I believe the primary issue here is one of first impression. And the reason it's a matter of first impression, Your Honors, is because over the last 100-some years, it has always been decided correctly in the courts below. It was not until this district court carved out the exception, and I'll back up, this case involves a resurrection or revival of a judgment. Mm-hmm. In this case, the judgment creditor got his judgment back in 2011, I think, sat on it. Mm-hmm. Never did anything, didn't try to execute on it, didn't have it recorded in my client's county where he lived, nothing. And under Georgia law, after 7 years of doing nothing, a judgment becomes dormant.
Mm-hmm. And before the and he moves to revive it.
Yeah,
the judgment creditor moves to revive the judgment.
Well,
right?
He did file a motion. After 3 more years after it's dormant, you've got 3 years to take one of two different actions to revive the judgment. Mm-hmm. You can either file a cause of action.
Yeah, file a new action, or
pursue stare facies.
That's what you do in state court, which you can't do in federal court.
That's
we don't have stare facies.
But you,
it's been abolished.
You
right?
are required to follow state law under Rule 69.
You are required in execution to act in accord with state procedures. Isn't that what the rule says? It says in accord.
In same time and manner, I believe, is the language.
Well, I think the text of the rule is in accord with.
Yeah, it does say a money judgment is enforced by a writ of execution unless the court directs otherwise. The procedure on execution and in proceeding supplementary to and in aid of judgment or execution must accord with the procedure of the state where the court is located.
Okay.
Okay.
So it has to accord with state law. State law in Georgia.
That doesn't mean it has to mirror it.
Absolutely, it does not have to mirror. I think there's a couple of cases that say it doesn't have to mirror. You can't be straitjacketed by the state proceedings.
Yeah, it would be pretty hard to do that here, right? Because as I understand, stare facies in state court, you have service of a summons and a complaint, a personal service, and you have it by the sheriff. Can't order the sheriff to do anything in federal court. It's from a count. It's particular to counties, of course. Our courts are districts that include lots of counties. Georgia has so many. How many counties are there in the Northern District of Georgia? I don't know. Probably 50, right?
I don't know how many there are.
It's a lot, right?
And I would agree with that. But the court is supposed to follow the law of the state, which is Georgia.
Well, it's supposed to act in accord with.
Act in accord with.
Okay.
And the
and so you have a motion that served on your client,
well,
right?
Sort of. what happened here?
And the court sets a hearing, and that's served on your client.
It was mailed to my client
at his last known address, and the address that he lists in this case.
But under
right?
Georgia law,
right?
I'm sorry. The last address in this case.
The address that you've been listing as his address in this case.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And he has never said that he didn't receive the notice on the record, has he?
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand you.
He's never said that he did not receive the notice on the record, has he?
If he had been served with a summons the way the stare facies requires, you would have evidence that he had
okay.
received it.
Okay, so one again... Has he ever said on the record that he has not received the service?
As far as I know, nothing's been said on the record.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think he appeared. They had a hearing. They were supposed to serve him with the summons.
It's never been denied that he received service in this case. Isn't that right?
It's never been.
That's never been one of the arguments that's been made.
I don't know if it's been proven that he has received or hasn't received. I don't think
you're
that's
here.
Exactly. I mean, he appealed pro se to this court, right? And he has said some things, right?
He became aware that there was a judgment entered against him.
Yeah, right, and how that came about, right? He's made arguments about how that came about.
The process that was used was not in accord with state law, though. That's
well, it didn't follow. It didn't use a writ that we don't have in federal court. But that doesn't mean that giving him notice and an opportunity to be heard wasn't effectively in accord with state procedures. Here we do it by motion. That's what we do in federal court, right?
Well, it is. But I think under Georgia law, notice and opportunity to be heard is enhanced by the requirement that he be served with a summons, that he be provided the 20 days to then appear before the court and present his defenses.
But that's not the process provided by the federal rules of civil procedure.
Unless you're trying to follow state law or be in accord
now,
with that.
It doesn't have to be an exact conformity,
that
right? You've already agreed to that.
I do agree with that. It doesn't have to be exact. But
it doesn't have to be seri facias, which we don't have.
It doesn't.
It can be by motion. I mean, the federal bankruptcy rules incorporate, do they not, Rule 5 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which is practiced by motion and service of process through, in exactly the way it was done here, right?
It was done by filing a motion in a court that didn't have the judgment and serving a copy of that motion on an attorney that wasn't licensed in the state of Georgia.
But it also served on him personally at his address, the address he lists in his pro se notice of appeal. Isn't that right?
I believe at some point it was, from what I read, it was supposedly sent to his address. Was it done in the time frame that was supposed to?
The same address listed in his notice on appeal, in his pro se notice?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
But I'm not disagreeing with Your Honor.
Okay.
And as a practical matter, you all are suggesting that it should have been in a newspaper, right?
That would have been probably the easiest way for them to have
in Georgia
service.
In Georgia, while he's in Nevada, right?
I think they probably have to serve, put it in the newspaper in Nevada where he lives.
I don't think that's the Georgia process, is it? It would be the county newspaper of the county of judgment, right?
Action is being brought, assuming that may be true, but they didn't do that. The mechanism.
Of course, we don't have a county newspaper for the Northern District of Georgia. This is, again, why you can't do this exactly the same way as in state court.
Your Honor, the process has been followed in Georgia for over 100 years. The courts have been strict about it, that you have to follow it to the T. You have to serve the summons. You have to give them the 20
days'
notice.
That's great if you're in state court.
That's true. But if you do this, if you uphold the decision below, what it appears that you are doing is carving out an exception that has never been there, and it's basically the exception.
You're not, though, right? Because what you're doing is you are respecting the forum, that is the federal forum, where the case is. You're not saying anything about how Georgia does its own interpretation of its own laws. You're saying that federal law, that the process that is being used by the federal courts is in accord with, which you've already said
that
doesn't have to be exactly the same as
the
process under Georgia law. And now you're saying, you're effectively arguing it does have to be the same as, because you're saying there needs to be strict compliance. And if there has to be strict compliance, that means it has to be the same as. But you've already conceded that it doesn't have to be the same as. So I'm trying to, maybe you can sort that out for me, how both can be true.
Okay. My understanding is, under Georgia law, there's two approaches to take. One is file a cause of action, and two is have the seri facias writ issued to the defendant with a summons. The judgment creditor below, for unknown reasons, there's nothing in the record that says why, he didn't try either of those options. He just made up his own avenue here, filed a motion in the wrong court.
Whoa. He was litigating in federal bankruptcy court, right?
It was litigated in federal bankruptcy court, and then judgment was entered in the district court.
Right. And so what he did was he followed the procedures that federal courts use, where he got his judgment, right?
No, his judgment was in the district court.
Right, a federal court.
And again, as I understand the law, Rule 69 says you are to follow state law.
In accord with state law.
Doesn't
mean exactly the same. He follows federal procedure.
Well, he didn't really. He just filed a motion. He didn't have it.
That's what you do in federal court.
Served the summons.
Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 81 says sere facias is abolished. You can proceed by motion. Isn't that what it says?
I believe it does say that. I'm not sure the bankruptcy rules say that. But
well, the bankruptcy rules don't reference that because that's not itself a rule of procedure. The rule of procedure, though, Rule 5 that governs motions, is in the bankruptcy rules, right?
It is.
Okay.
I think.
Well, with your limited time, it's my understanding we carry with the case whether or not your client should be declared a fugitive, and that there was a motion to dismiss from Mr. Bailey to enforce the fugitive disentitlement doctrine, and it does appear from the facts that your client has been ducking and dodging enforcement of this monetary judgment and only appears when the stakes are really raised. So can you just address why that doctrine should not be imposed here?
There has been no arrest warrant ever issued in regard to my client. The proceedings below, I think that related to a contempt order that was issued against him. And those proceedings have been closed. So I don't think there's any basis to issue an arrest warrant at this point in time. He goes in and out of the country periodically. If there was ever an arrest warrant, they surely would have picked him up. So I don't think there's any basis to claim that he's a fugitive at this point in time. And I see that I am out of time. If you have no further questions.
Okay. Why don't we hear from Mr. Doyle? You've saved 3 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Erickson.
Good morning, Your Honors. And
good morning.
May it please the court.
Yep.
My name is Daniel Dura, hearing on behalf of Donald H. Bailey. As you guys were mentioning initially, we would... this court. My apologies. Initially, we would invoke a ruling on our motion to dismiss the appeal pursuant to the Fugitive Disentitlement Doctrine. On its own initiative, this very court suggested barring Mr. Hans-Jürgens from any future appeal of a final judgment in this litigation following his apparent flight from this body in 2015, as this court has mentioned. This flight occurred as he was appealing a contempt order entered against him by the district court.
If we were to apply fugitive disentitlement, though, it'd be a real extension, right? I mean, there's no arrest warrant here, right?
That is true, but the district court...
I mean, has any court ever extended the doctrine in this circumstance?
Not to my research, Your Honor. But, you know, even turning to the merits of the case, as this court was mentioning... we would request that this court find that the district court did find substantial compliance with the Federal Rule 69 and that Mr. Hans-Jürgens was sufficiently served with notice of the pendency of the emergency motion.
Have any questions?
Nope.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
I remember that. Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I would like to point out, it appears to me that if the 11th Circuit does uphold this decision, it is opening up a Pandora's box of anytime anyone has to file a motion in the district court, they no longer have to follow the rule of law, the laws. All they have to do is file a motion. Call it an emergency if that helps.
I think what they will know is that when you're a when you're a judgment debtor in federal court and you're served with a motion to revive the judgment that was entered by the federal court at your personal residence, you probably ought to pay attention to that.
That would make some sense. But under the, again, if you, they did follow the Georgia procedures, as in there's a companion case next door today on the same issue.
I know, I'm aware of that.
And in
that
case,
it doesn't have the bankruptcy wrinkle, right?
But in that case, the district court judge did follow the sire facias procedure. He required his judgment creditor, he stayed the proceedings so that the time didn't lapse and the judgment become dead. He stayed the proceedings three times, I believe, to let the judgment creditor's attorney attempt to get service over the
personal service by hand?
Yes, or by publication, however it was to be done.
You tell me your client that, though, if we were to vacate and remand, would agree to accept personal service?
It wouldn't do any good, Your Honor, because the time has lapsed.
If the motion to revive was timely.
If the motion to revive
was
timely.
From what I can tell, it was.
It was.
And the only issue is service. Will your client accept service?
I believe he would accept service at that time.
And if that happened, he can't go relitigate the underlying judgment. And it appears to me this would be a totally futile exercise, sending it back to the district court.
I don't know what defenses he may or may not have. As you may be aware, I've only been involved in this case a very short time.
I am aware of this. I know.
But if you were to send it back down, it is my understanding that it's too late for the creditor to do anything. You could say that he's substantially complied and you want to just give my client his rights to be present in court, which I certainly is your prerogative, but it's our position that they didn't comply with the easy statutes and provisions under Georgia law they could have complied with. They've asked the district court to make an exception. It's done that, and by doing that, it's opened up a Pandora's box where any time anyone wants to make an exception to law, they just have to file a motion with the district court.
Or maybe what they need to do is just when they're in federal court, follow the federal rules of civil procedure.
Thank you,
Mr. Erickson. We'll hear now the third case, Lucky versus MetLife.